If you haven't tried Super Beats Soft Chews, you're missing out. Super Beats Soft Chews combines non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Soft Chews is clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Super Beats Soft Chews promote heart-healthy energy the way nature intended, without caffeine or stimulants. Just take 2 delicious Super Beats Soft Chews a day, anytime, anywhere. You won't find blood pressure and energy support that tastes this good anywhere else. And now with your first purchase at danasbeats.com, you can get a free 30-day supply of Super Beats Chews, plus a free 30-day supply of vitamin D3 Chews for immune health support. That's a 30-day supply of both Super Beats Chews and vitamin D3 Chews for free. Act now and also get 2 free bonus gifts valued at over $50. Only available at danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com.
When it comes to the business dealings of those who could serve in high-ranking government positions, full transparency is the only option. So I encourage each of these individuals, if nominated, to take an open book approach throughout the hearings and confirmation process. In fact, I will make a pledge here today. I will not support any nominee who doesn't provide full transparency into their work on behalf of a foreign government. Will not do it. The American people deserve to know if these or any future nominees are beholden to anything other than our national interest.
Woo! That was John Cornyn bringing some heat yesterday on the Senate floor. And man, I was wondering why he was trending yesterday. And yesterday evening, and when I was reading it, reading about it and listening to his speech, and well, it was because Democrats are mad because they felt as though barely holding a majority in the House gives them some kind of mandate, which that's not actually how that works. And this is a feature of the system. It isn't a bug. And so they went after John Cornyn because they're trying to use this as a way to motivate voters in Georgia. So everything that happens on the Senate floor from here on out is all about how can it be used to best position Democrats in Georgia, which is the last stand. Welcome to the show. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Let me put it in terms that you can understand, and because I say this probably more often than I should, everything can be taken back to Lord of the Rings. Everything can be taken back to Lord of the Rings. So imagine, let me put the Georgia Senate runoff races, the two there, in context, because that will determine these races, whether or not the Senate continues to be overseen by Mitch McConnell, or whether or not it goes to somebody like Chuck Schumer, and the entirety of Trump's 4 years is undone. This is not Helms Deep. Helms Deep was kind of the election, sort of. No. This is like Return of the King, Lord of the Rings, when Legolas jumped up and killed this giant elephant with all these pirates on it. That's what this is. It's the battle to end battles. It's the battle for Middle Earth, you could say. So I want you to look at it in that kind of dramatic situation. Because it is dramatic. There's going to be sweeping dramatic changes if Republicans are not controlling the Senate. And I will talk about some of those coming up. So what we're following today, I sent you out, for you newsletter subscribers, I sent you out a list of just some of the things that I'm reading. Some of the things that I'm reading are things we'll talk about later this week, but it's still something that I'm kind of digesting, and it's not necessarily like a 24/7 kind of news cycle headline. And I sent you some headlines too. And of course, a really fun thing that James O'Keefe did, we'll play that here coming up, because he ambushed a CNN editorial call featuring CNN head Jeff Zucker. And it was really funny to listen to that. The other thing that we're looking at is, excuse me, the cabinet picks for Biden, the list of appointees that he has. And we haven't really talked about Janet Yellen in Treasury and economics, and we talked a little bit about Office of Management and Budget, OMB, that the pick that he had for this. We talked about how Neera Tanden was one of those individuals, if not one of the main individuals, so high up within the party, and that was really pushing the conspiracy theory of 2016 being an illegitimate election because Russia somehow was hacking everything on behalf of Donald Trump. But even though nothing was actually changed, everything's fine now. You guys can go ahead and trust it. There's nothing. No, don't ask any questions here. Don't ask any questions at all. And by the way, I will say that Republicans haven't even gone so far as Democrats did in 2016. And there's actual serious irregularities happening. So Neera Tanden, here's just my thought on this. And I'm going to tie this into the audio soundbite that we played coming into the show, because John Cornyn was referring to Neera Tanden when he was standing there on the Senate floor discussing how, you know, this isn't going to happen and we're not going to, you know, bring this, you know, we're not going to bring this person up, etc. And this person's not going to get past the Senate. And there are a number of other senators who are saying the same thing. I particularly, you know, my opinion on the whole thing is I don't think that anyone who was involved with spreading that malicious BS, I don't think that that person should be within a mile of a White House position or any government agency position. End of story. Absolutely end of story. As though being a warmonger wasn't enough, Neera Tanden was a conspiracy theorist. She would be like the Alex Jones of the Joe Biden administration, I guess, if you want to say that. I don't know. And the stuff that she was saying, she was trying to undermine an actual election. So you might even say that there's even some more harm there if you wanted to have that fight. I'm just putting it out there in terms that leftists can understand. And so she was spreading these conspiracy theories. She's in, of course, Center for American Progress. I'm not a fan of that entity. She's a longtime Clintonite. She's someone who she completely defended the involvement in Libya, getting into Libya, which was an absolute disaster. And of course, it created this power vacuum. And Glenn Greenwald has been who co-founded The Intercept, has just been going after her for relentlessly for the past couple of days. And she deserves it. She deserves that. This is someone who thought that they could operate without any kind of reproach at all because she was so ingrained, she was so embedded with the Clinton party, the Clinton faction of the Democrat Party. And so this Josh Holmes, who was former chief of staff, I love this quote in New York Post from him. He worked for Mitch McConnell, and he was talking on Twitter. He was saying that her nomination was a, quote, sacrifice to the confirmation gods, which I thought was funny. And a couple of other, another ex-advisor of the Senate Judiciary Committee said, yeah, it would be basically, it's a political funeral is what it would be. And that's when Cornyn put her chances at zero. And he said, you know, she's got an endless stream of disparaging comments about Republican senators, which is true. I mean, she has been on Twitter running her mouth about everybody from Susan Collins, and not in the nicest of ways either. And so the way that the left has tried to respond to this is, and just to pull up Glenn Kessler here from Washington Post, Glenn Kessler tweeted, curious, did Cornyn ever publicly object to Trump's combative and insulting comments on Twitter about GOP senators such as Flake, Romney, Corker, and so forth? Now, it's taking everything I have to not retweet that and say, okay, but where's the lie? Number one, I mean, where was his lie about Jeff Flake or Mitt Romney or Bob Corker? Anyway. And also, I didn't realize that OMB director was the same thing as president of the United States. Oh, but it's not, though. So what a stupid and insipid comparison. I mean, I do expect better of the people who masquerade as our intellectual and moral betters. But really, can we at least try for a rec league level? Because this doesn't even muster enough strength to get to JV. So the furor around John Cornyn, and John Cornyn was absolutely correct. He was absolutely right in all of this. And so now they're looking at, hopefully, I don't know if they're going to, if it's going to be the Paycheck Protection Program or any kind of relief. I have something for you on that you're going to be really, really mad about. And I'm kind of going, okay, I'm going to tell you. I was going back and forth as to whether or not I wanted to share it, because now we're looking at potentially, yeah, an airline bailout. I don't know. That's where we're... Did you see the thing from Reuters? I'll talk about this more, but this is just one of the things that the battle is going to be focusing on. Reuters reports that U.S. Airlines would receive $17 billion for 4 months of payroll support under a new $908 billion bipartisan, air quotes, Senate coronavirus relief proposal. This is a spokeswoman for Senator Mark Warner. The proposal would also include $15 billion in transit systems, $4 billion for airports, $8 billion for buses, $1 billion for Amtrak. Why the hell are we subsidizing Amtrak again? What in the ever-loving hell does this have to do with paycheck protection or anything else? What in the world does this have to do with this? My tax, you know what? If you want my tax dollars to go towards the streamlined fecal tube that is Amtrak, then I suggest you come and bring a lot of people with you to Dallas, Texas, and you pry my money out of my hands. But make sure you have enough cots and a triage area ready. Are you serious? This is what we're doing? Really? With this? Hey, you guys can't eat, but Amtrak, which is ran worse than the DMV, we're going to go ahead and spend more government money on it after the tons of government money that we already spent on it. Mm-mm-mm. I told you were going to get mad. I just made myself mad. So we're going to come back to that. But, and you have to keep in mind that in some of these instances, with some of these cabinet positions, depending on who actually gets through, I can't imagine Yellen getting through. And I would be screaming at some GOP if Yellen got through, because you want to talk about somebody who would look at, you wouldn't even have to have the house. There's a number of things that she could do to jack up taxes on everybody, whether it's gas tax or something else. That would absolutely punch Americans in the gut, particularly those who, what do they say, anything under the $400,000 earners. But let's go ahead and act ignorant, all these people who've never actually operated a small business or any kind of, you know, S-Corp or anything like that, where people actually have to file and it looks like they're the individuals that have all the money when actually it's their company, because we have such an insane financial illiteracy in this country. It's embarrassing, but I digress. All that would be affected. So, a few other things we're looking at. We have a lot. Joe Manchin and AOC. The feud steps up because AOC, apparently, Joe Manchin says that she's only active on Twitter. She's not really active in her committees and doesn't do anything with bills. It was such, I have to say, if you're going to play this game, you got to play it right. You know what I'm saying? It is really good to get out there and flex and act like you're a hard ass on social media, especially if you're a congresswoman. It's really cool to look like you're so hard. But what's even better is to not even try to be, but you are. And Joe Manchin may be a Democrat, and he may give it to with Schumer where when it counts, but he's like one of the last of the moderates, and he is a thorn in their side, and I'm here for that with all the popcorn in the world. He actually said, quote, "I don't know the young lady. I really don't. I never met her." And he goes, "I guess she put the dagger stare on me," because he was asked about this during an interview. And he had said, "Well, I don't really see anything that she does. She just, you know, it seems like she's more active on Twitter than anything else." That's what he actually said. He told that to the New York Times. So she's trying to, I'm sure, furiously focus grouping a comeback, George Costanza style. Maybe it'll involve the jerk store. Maybe it won't. We'll see. But I'm here for that fight. I just think it's funny because he's playing with his food and she's like just punching way above. She really is. I have a lot. Andrea Mitchell last night, and this is one of the things we're going to come back with after we get into headlines. Andrea Mitchell did something rare yesterday. She criticized, and I have the trend, that I saved the trend. She criticized Joe Biden and his availability. Right? Saying that, well, he didn't alert the media immediately about the angler. He wasn't as forthcoming as one would have hoped that he would have been. And the left grabbed, they went to the torches and pitchfork store. They loaded up their candy van and they immediately ran for Andrea Mitchell, which I thought was fascinating because you are not allowed at any moment to be out of lockstep with that hive mind. I hope the right never becomes that. So we got a lot to discuss, and we're going to be speaking with journalist Cheryl Atkinson coming up later on in the show. I got a lot of media stuff for you too. We'll get in the cabinet picks and all kinds of stuff, the latest with the ballot fights and so much more. Travel around the holidays is always hard, and especially this year it's incredibly difficult for a lot of people to get with loved ones. So I've gotten some of my flower friends at Bloomsy Box to announce their Bloomin' Cyber Monday sale. So right now, save 25% on spectacular Bloomsy Box flowers, like the ones I'm sending to some of my family for the holidays. 25% off. Bloomsy Box are better blooms. And picture the smile on that special someone's face when your holiday flowers arrive. It's kind of magical. Bloomsy Box are spectacular flowers, sustainably grown on family farms around the world. Your flower gift is handpicked, arranged at the farm, and delivered straight to your door, so they stay fresher longer. Their prices are already incredible, but with their Bloomin' Cyber Monday sale, you'll save an extra 25%. No hidden fees, no endless upsells. The sale ends soon, but you can get 25% off now if you hurry over to bloomsybox.com and enter Dana. That's promo code Dana for 25% off at bloomsybox.com.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
I love this headline. It's from UPI, and I laugh so hard. Deer steals hunter's gun, flees into the woods. This actually happened. It was in the Czech Republic. A hunter was charged by a deer that somehow, and this is like a once-in-a-lifetime thing, one of his antlers snagged on the man's the gun strap and fled into the woods with it. Yes, it was in the South Bohemian region. Police said that a hunter contacted authorities to recount the story of how he lost it. You know what? I'm also going to lose any guns this way if they decide to make an NFA items out of commonly owned semi-auto rifles. But they said that the guy was hunting and his dog startled a stag and the stag ran towards him. And that's how an antler ripped his sleeve and it snagged on his rifle, which he had slung over his left hand. I think that's hysterical. But everybody's safe, and they're still looking. They're actually looking for this deer. So you could get like a nice rack and a gun. See? Stay with us. If you haven't tried Super Beats soft chews, you're missing out. Super Beats soft chews combines non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats soft chews is clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Super Beats soft chews promote heart-healthy energy the way nature intended, without caffeine or stimulants. Just take 2 delicious Super Beats soft chews a day, anytime, anywhere. You won't find blood pressure and energy support that tastes this good anywhere else. And now with your first purchase at danasbeats.com, you can get a free 30-day supply of Super Beats chews, plus a free 30-day supply of vitamin D3 chews for immune health support. That's a 30-day supply of both Super Beats chews and vitamin D3 chews for free. Act now and also get 2 free bonus gifts valued at over $50. Only available at danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com. danasbeats.com.
Want a deeper dive into The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana Lash's chapter and verse newsletter by visiting danalash.com and clicking on the subscribe tab. Don't worry, your info is safe with her.
And Yumish, turning back to the president-elect and the injury he suffered Sunday, it was also notable, you know, he fell playing with his dog Major, we're told, on Saturday. It wasn't until Sunday that the White House pool knew that he was going somewhere, and then it turned out to be a doctor, you know, for an x-ray, and then they needed more imaging, so CT scans. They weren't as forthcoming as you would hope they would be.
Ooh, that was Andrea Mitchell talking about the, I guess, like just tipping off the press pool about Biden's, what is it, his hairline fracture? It was in his foot or ankle. He sprained his ankle, but he has like a hairline fracture in his foot. Now, and welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. Good to be with you. Momentarily, I'll tell you where you can find me elsewhere. That was a very milquetoast critique, right? Yeah. That wasn't harsh in any way. She was simply remarking on a delay and not really sure what there. I mean, there's really nothing mean there. She was being honest about it. I'll give her that credit. This was on MSNBC yesterday afternoon. Well, she got a lot of heat for that. A lot of heat. Because she says, look, it happened on Saturday, but no one was told about it until he was on his way to the doctor's office on Sunday. They weren't as forthcoming as you would, they weren't as forthcoming as you would hope they would be with the press pool that's supposed to cover him. That was her direct quote. Now, the press pool, one of the reasons that we have a press pool is you're following the president of the United States, or you're following the, in this case now, he's, I mean, I know that they're still contesting everything, but he's got the Secret Service detail and the transition has begun. So he's got a pool of reporters that follow him. And they do this so that they can report on anything that happens with the person that they're covering. This is if there's any health issues, it's supposed to be this guarantee of transparency. It's if the press was to work as the press ought to work, those are representatives of the people who are asking questions of elected officials. But that was not allowed. She trended. I saw this last night and I could not believe the hate she got. I could not believe the hate that she got over this. So the meanest things, they were saying, LOL, they said she was part of the establishment. MSNBC folks lost their ever-loving minds at her. They said, are you blanking kidding us with this, Andrea Mitchell? They videotaped him at the doctor's office. A bunch of verified lefties screaming at her. They said she might as well wear a MAGA hat, said one. Oh, my God. Oh, for seriously. They demanded that she retire. One of the critiques was what she's doing, and this got thousands of retweets, what she's doing is planting the seeds of mistrust. There were calls to boycott. I mean, you're not allowed to criticize. They said that she should get an Airhead Award. I'm just like looking over some of the most popular ones that really went out. Wow. It's not tolerated. You may not question Joe Biden. You may not. Now, I will say, I'll give credit where it's due just because I want to see more of it. That's a consistent position for her to have. And if journalists were being journalists and not advocates, they would all have this position. But you're not allowed to question anything. This is a member of the media. You're not allowed to question anything. Now, a couple of other things here. I will say that that's where my credit stops with her, because she said some horrible things about Scott Atlas. And Scott Atlas, what was Scott Atlas's big, because he resigned yesterday. I have this statement that he sent out. He was an advisor to the president, Dr. Atlas, on the coronavirus. He had tweeted out yesterday evening, just a little bit before 7, he was honored to have served the American people during these difficult times. He has a one-page talk and was discussing, kind of just going over everything that he did. So what did he... I know that Robert Redfield hated him. And Robert Redfield's CDC head. He hated Scott Atlas. And he was actually overheard, because this is so professional. By the way, when you're traveling, always know who is around you. It's called situational awareness. But he was overheard on a flight. He was on the phone, and there was a journalist working for NBC who was on the flight. And this was like back in in September. And they heard Redfield talking about Atlas, saying everything he says is false and just like tearing him down. So Redfield hated him. Apparently he would argue with Dr. Birx and he would argue with Dr. Fauci. So what was Scott Atlas's big sin? Why did everybody want him out? Why did they say that he was irresponsible? Because he pointed out their inconsistencies? Because he noted that cloth masks are about as good at preventing contamination or infection as much as it is to wish upon a star for birth control? I mean, like, seriously, that's... There's how many times we've gone over those studies? Numerous. The cloth masks, particularly. He's just only ever been honest. That's the thing. I was thinking about this a little earlier when I was reading some of the response to Atlas's resignation. Do you remember how the media was enraged at Trump when it came out that, which we all were all sort of discussing, it wasn't as though nobody had an idea of this, about the communicability for how you can catch it, how it can be airborne, communicable disease or virus, how it can be transmitted through droplets and all this stuff, thus it can be airborne. And there was, the media was infuriated that Trump didn't come out and hold a press conference telling everyone that they were going to die and screaming and then trying to find an exit. They were infuriated that he did not terrify the public. And I remember that press conference was when we were on air when it happened, we played it, that he was asked about that. And he said, well, what am I going to do? Am I just going to get out here and, like, you know, why would I scare you all unnecessarily? Because this was something that I think people sort of figured out anyway. But I thought that it was weird. If you kind of, we all sort of knew it anyway. Do you have to have an official statement from the government in order for you to be able to believe what you see with your own eyes? And what you read and what you hear? That is terrifying to me. That we have so many people in this country that they can't accept it unless the government puts a stamp on it. And I think with Atlas, it was the same way. Trump just told people the truth. And Atlas told people the truth. But that did not go with the Rube Goldberg narrative that the Faucis and the Burks and everyone else had. I don't have any... Look, I know a lot of people hate Fauci. I think that he's a guy who got in over his head with the PR of it all. I don't dispute that he's an incredibly intelligent person and that he obviously knows his stuff on this, clearly. I'm not going to go and sit here and tell him about infectious diseases, just like he's not going to come to me and tell me about guns or gun law. But at the same time, I do feel as though he got a little bit in deep with it, and because he got a lot of media attention and people were selling merchandise of him, like, you know, trust Fauci and all of this stuff. You didn't see any of that with Atlas. And in fact, when even Burks, there was one time when she even appeared to contradict him. And do you remember when the media turned on her? It was really bizarre. And that's why they've hated Scott Atlas from the start. They blame Scott Atlas, who's been consistent the entire time on everything. He has been entirely consistent with everything. Whereas Fauci, Jordan Satchel did a really good write-up of this. There's a huge timeline of how he went back and forth on opening and reopening. March 12th, 2020, Mark Knoller with CBS, NIH's Dr. Anthony Fauci supports school closing, says steps need to be taken for containment and mitigation. And then you go to April 11th, Fauci, who agreed that city schools should be closed through June. And then look at April 10th. I mean, kids could get infected if Florida reopened schools. Another one, May 13th, Fauci urged Americans to be careful when it comes to kids. And they talked about Kawasaki syndrome and how you need to keep stuff closed. And then May 14th, Trump totally disagrees with Fauci on keeping schools closed next fall. What? And Trump disagreed with him. And then in June, when he was testifying on Capitol Hill, Fauci said school reopenings depend on the, I'm quoting him, dynamics of the outbreak. And then you look at July. Oh, well, now maybe we can open them on a case-by-case basis. The 24th of July, he continues to kind of go back and forth, maybe on a case-by-case basis. He told the Washington Post, quote, it depends on where you live. We live in a very large country, so if you have a country or a place where there's little activity, it might be very little you have to do to send the kids back to school. Then you look at August. He calls for continuing closure of schools in areas with high transmission. That was August 4th. Good Morning America tweeted, some schools close after reopening. The reports on latest warnings by Fauci and officials. Bloomberg Quick Take, August 4th. Quote, the default position should be to try as best as you possibly can to open up the schools for in-person learning, end quote. August 13th, Fauci falsely states that bars are vectors for transmission, argues for a trade-off that involves shutting down some industries while keeping schools open, Jordan Satchel reported. 13th of August, could have many months of virtual learning. September 3rd, schools can open back up if the virus is under control. That was a CNN interview that he did. September 20th, Fauci says some schools can safely reopen. November 29th, then now you have this almost year-old research showing that schools are not vectors for coronavirus transmission. And now he's like, well, bars need to be shut down. And then the audio soundbite that we played yesterday where he says, quote, close the bars and keep the schools open. Look, there's two things at play here. I do not hold it against people who are transparent and honest about what they know and what they don't know as it relates to specifically dealing with a brand new virus that no one has ever seen, that some question whether or not it was man-made. A lot of stuff people wonder about it. We still can't predict its behavior. People still go back and forth on preventative measures. I don't think, enough of a consensus about length of immunity. So I don't begrudge people who are transparent and want to be open and honest with the public about knowing what they know and knowing what they don't know, which is separate from acting like you know it and shutting down a whole damn country and endangering the mental health and welfare of millions of kids across the country, and then not even being able to own up to it and say that it was a mistake, and that maybe, and then maybe not continue to do the same thing with other industries like bars, which we talked about in Nashville a couple of months ago. It seemed as though city leaders were looking to keep bars closed when yet it was proven that they were not the vectors of transmission. Then I saw a story yesterday. And Kane, I don't know if I sent this to you or if I put it in Slack or wherever, but I saw transmission yesterday where the report is that the majority, they're thinking now the majority of, here it is. This is from Channel 21 CBS DFW, Channel 11. El Paso mayor says recent coronavirus spike due to fatigue, and it's coming from shopping at large retailers. They're saying that it's coming from going out and shopping. Do you see why people are frustrated? Do you understand my complete, I'm completely baffled as to why Scott Atlas, who has been consistent from day one and has even said, look, we don't even know about the behavior of this virus. You are not undermining your influence or authority by admitting to people that you know what you know and you know what you don't. I tell people on this show every day, I don't go on air with something that I don't know. Maybe you want me to talk about a certain issue that's making headlines or making waves, and if I am not prepared to confidently, feeling that I have complete confidence in my knowledge of it, I'm not going to speculate and just do red meat stuff and do crap radio just for the sake of doing it. Know what you know and know what you don't know. Atlas has been consistent from day one, and he's been incredibly transparent with people on this. Fauci has not. Yet Fauci's the one who's sanctified, and Atlas is the one who is demonized in the press. And so much of this has to do with media's obsession to just get at Trump. It's so damn stupid.
The Dana Show.
My favorite thing of the past, 12 hours was the president retweeted an account called Cat Turd on Twitter. And Cat Turd then trended. And it's just like a right-leaning person that, you know, nobody wants to use their name who when they are asked, when they're like actually being serious on social media, because nobody wants to get canceled. But it has enraged all these people on the left. And I don't think I've ever, it's been a long time since I have been thusly entertained. So I am just really enjoying it, really enjoying it. And then my favorite tweet right now comes from my friend Derek Hunter, who retweeted Daily Mail that has a headline, Egypt arrests photographer for sexy pyramids photo shoot. Derek's commentary, the pictures are a great defense against the charge. It's too good. We got a lot more coming up for you. Cheryl Atkinson will be joining us later on in the show as well. Stick with us. Back after this.
Everyone knows that the Senate plays a pivotal role in confirming a new president's cabinet. In the midst of this once-in-a-century crisis, it's imperative the next administration can count on the Senate to confirm its cabinet without delay. So hearings on President-elect Biden's nominee should begin in January, immediately after the Georgia runoff elections. Let me say that again. The Senate should begin hearings on President-elect Biden's nominees in January, immediately after the Georgia Senate elections, so that key cabinet officials can be confirmed on January 20th and soon thereafter.
That's not how that works. Doesn't work that way.
Did they afford Trump the same thing?
Yeah.
No.
No, we want you to set our people before, like, we even have for the transition. Good grief, that's Chuck Schumer. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. DanaLash.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. That's like me going to, like, buying a house, and before it's official and even done, demanding that the people move out. Yep. No? You're president for 4 years. And every second of those 4 years. That's how it works? No, we're not. It's not going to. He has to know this. He's such a troll. He has to know this. But we have a process in this country. And no, we're not going to begin confirmation hearings before inauguration. We're not going to do that. And he says it's a once in a century crisis. It's an imperative that the next administration can count on the Senate. I'm sorry, Bork, what? Can't. Mm-mm. Not going to work that way and at all. All right. So I have some media headlines that I'm desperate to jettison from my cranial space. I saw this headline over at Mediaite. I didn't watch this. I know Maria Bartiromo. I've met her a couple of times. I've been on her show whenever I've been in New York. I've been on her show, especially with book stuff. And she's always been a very, very, very nice, very pleasant. And she had on the President's Sunday, and you remember everyone got mad, and all they could say were, oh, lies, he just lied, he's full of lies. It was just really, you know, you didn't miss anything from their hot takes. And she was simply discussing the irregularities in voting, and she didn't say anything that I don't think could even be interpreted as crazy and as out there as the things you would hear on MSNBC. They had a discussion and they talked about things that are public knowledge. Well, it made the left infuriated. So Mediaite has this headline, Fox News anchor Maria Bartiromo's. They were making fun of her interview. And I don't know that they ever respected her as a journalist, but they say that, oh, she's done as a journalist now. Who in the ever-loving hell are these clowns to declare who is and who is not a journalist? You don't get to do that. We do. You can't sit with us. It was the Mean Girls take. But that, they're mad at her, I guess, because she gave him time. Well, and they can't get him on any of their shows, so they're mad about it. But they've really went in on her. And we're trying to say somehow that she lost credibility and she can't be taken seriously anymore. And she's, you know, this, that, or the other. I can't take seriously people who peddled the conspiracy theory about Russia in 2016 for 4 years, and some of whom were paid off by Fusion GPS. And we know this because we FOIA'd and received documentation with names redacted of professional journos who were taking propaganda leaked to them by Fusion GPS and the DNC and Hillary Clinton. And I'll remind everyone, they were taking that leaked, debunked Kremlin gossip and using it to substantiate a FISA warrant on a private citizen simply because they didn't like that private citizen's politics. Oh, and then it turns out private citizen Carter Page was actually a CIA asset. And when the FBI found out that their whole case was just blowing up, they decided to edit emails omitting that when going back to renew it with the FISA court, thus lying, and nobody's gone to jail for it. So I have two really healthy fingers to give you. You don't get to declare who is and who is not a journalist. I also have to share with you the most ridiculous, obsessive hot take that I have ever read. And I'm going to warn you because I am going to get catty. It needs to happen. I read this piece, and it was from the Washington Post, and I was thinking about, you know, all the different ways. The first lady, and this is something that every first lady does. I don't remember a time when this didn't happen. But they do they unveil the White House Christmas decorations, right? And so Melania Trump, first lady, also showcased the White House Christmas decorations. Everybody keeps going back to that audio soundbite where she says, where she had said, who the blank, because her, can I be real, her bitchy friend recorded her, not a friend at all. And she wasn't slamming Christmas decorations. She was slamming the focus, obsessive focus on everything she does, including Christmas decorations. But our media thinks that you're stupid and that you're going to buy such a myopic hot take. And so that's what they went with. So they have their Christmas decorations at the White House. I liked all the stuff that they've done. I liked the red trees. I liked the kooky white ones because I am a goth kid at heart. So I loved all of it. And I liked that it was just different, right? And so I can't believe this person did this. Monica Hesse. Oh, boy. Hesse. H-E-S-S-E. We wouldn't want to give anyone the false impression here that we were suggesting anything else. So I don't know who this person is. I've never read. They're a style reporter. Bobs are out, by the way. Style reporter. I told you it's going to be really difficult for me to get over this. That the little catty aspect. I had this piece, I think this clocked in at, I can't remember, it's like over 1,000 words. I don't know. So this individual wrote a huge essay on Melania Trump and the quote, bewildering Christmas decorations. Yes. So can I share some of this with you? Because I really want to mock it. And I'm going to take this segment to do it. Thank you. Monica Hesse, E-S-S-E, writes, it's our final Christmas with Melania Trump, and we shall celebrate in the usual way by accompanying FLOTUS on an annual tour of her White House decor. A one-minute video that also appears to serve as a trailer for a movie about a woman who wakes up in a castle one holiday season and goes searching for the person who spiked her eggnog with mushrooms. And so here we are, following the First Lady down colonnades and breezeways as she encounters rows of florally festooned evergreens in the manner of someone who has never seen a tree. Sidebar. Has this woman ever seen any of the White House decor? Because there have been... I mean, that's actual, it is just is what it is. Do you honest? I don't, no one thinks that she personally went in there and decorated everything herself and stayed up till 3 a.m. doing this. That's why you have like a whole staff. You have a whole historical society that deals with the White House. So you're getting mad at a bunch of people because you don't like the First Lady. So petty. She continues, the decor contains many roses, white lights, and hanging ornaments, airplanes and speedboats, which Melania looks up at and beholds in wonder. There's a painting of a reindeer and another one of a fox. And then she goes on, over the past 4 years, Melania's off-kilter Christmas decorations have become a reliable source of controversy. They began when her first holiday in 2017, when she unveiled a maze of icy, creepy branches that appeared to be a joint production created by the set director from Haunting of Hill House and The Babadook. Actually, first off, no. And it's more like Tim Burton. Like, could you please be a little bit deeper with your, I mean, if you're the style editor, FFS, like, can you please like be a little deeper with your references than just like going to people who rip off the Burton aesthetic? I mean, again, it pains my little black heart. She continues, last year's decor in a color palette of attractive cremes was considerably less terrifying, but it contained the contradictory elements that have made each year perplexing. Now, I'm thinking the contradictory elements, surely we're going to have a long missive about what contradictory elements are confusing this woman. No, she gets into, Melania's Christmas videos contain ornaments ostensibly made by children, but there's no evidence of actual children. Those visiting school groups are handmade gingerbread. Sidebar, OMG, we are in a pandemic. You would be the first person to bitch and moan about it in another 5,000 word column if something like that happened. Look at FLOTUS with her creepy trees killing school children all around America. So you're mad that you didn't get that narrative and that you have to, like, I don't know, stay up with your cat and your box wine and try to, like, come up with another column to meet your deadline at WAPO? I continue. The videos contain messages that the White House represents America's home, but it's depicted as the kind of place where they give you a pair of slip-on hospital booties as soon as you walk in the door. You know, because it's so different from the days of Barack Obama and Clinton, when they sold out the bedroom and stole the artwork on the walls, or Barack Obama when they had, like, concerts in the White House. Again, though, endemic pay, Pig Latin for the kids in the back. Good heavens. She continues, in a season meant to celebrate family, friends, community, and warmth, Melania always appears alone and very, very cold.
Two varies.
Yeah, not just one vary, two varies. Maybe it's because you all are a bitch to her.
Yeah.
And there's more. The fans who love Melania's Christmas decor think it's elegant and that she's returned elegance to the White House. But there are those who feel the White House should be a place of inclusion, where you hang up the weird calamari ornament because Rhode Island made it. Or, I mean, goes on, and it looks so crazy. This woman's column is ridiculous. And then she talks about how apparently it's racist somehow. Of course it is. For real. She literally says this. I'm going to go ahead and say that this woman's sentence right here is racist, because that's how this works, right? But there were darker undercurrents to the Melania Christmas debate, too. The defenders of Melania compare her to her predecessor, Michelle Obama, and it became hard to believe that elegant was a code word for anything other than white.
Oh my God.
Melania is elegant because she represented white femininity. Oh, here we go, hating the white women again. And, I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. There you go. You know what it sounds like? It sounds genuinely so incredibly unfortunate that someone can allow their appreciation of Christmas to be completely trashed because of their unbridled hate and undercurrent of jealousy that they foster of the First Lady. That you can allow your appreciation of Christmas to be diminished because you are so politically partisan and completely flat as a person and character that this is all you can ever do is put everything through the filter of politics. What a sad existence. I mean, if I had to just choose a Christmas tree that best represented this Washington Post column, it would be a bare tree with no lights and some Zima underneath and a dead cat. Just saying.
Yeah.
There you go. Just sad. How ridiculous. Oh, but I even have more, but we're out of time. Oh, I know there's more. I thought the Christmas decorations were great. This November, we must take a stand. Now is the time to stand for what you believe in, for what makes America great, and for truth and freedom. With Patriot Mobile, you can take that stand with America's only Christian conservative wireless company. From now until November 7th, switch to Patriot Mobile with their Stand Up for Freedom promotion. Get a free Samsung A11 phone with 2-year commitment, free premier activation, and a free gift. Patriot Mobile takes a stand with a portion of every dollar going to support organizations that simply support the Constitution and your values. At 972 Patriot or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. Use promo code Dana for a free Samsung A11 phone, free premier activation, and a free gift. Or get a free month of service and $45 off any phone in stock. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana, promo code Dana, or call 972 Patriot. Stand up for freedom now with Patriot Mobile. That's 972 Patriot. Patriot Mobile, our plans, your freedom.
Check out all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on official Dana Lash on Facebook, youtube.com/The Dana Show, or channel 244 on Pluto TV.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
I do not know why this restaurant owner in Dallas, Texas, got so much heat on the socials, but a black restaurant owner told women to get out because they were standing on his tables and twerking. I mean, I'm a germaphobe already, so the pandemic already makes that bad, but when you put feet up on a table where people are eating, that is nasty. Stop it. He said he approached the women before the incident, which is apparently what some witnesses said, but they kept doing it. And that's when Kevin Kelly kind of lost his mind at True Kitchen Plus Cocktails in Dallas, and a media frenzy happened. And at first, the white progressives were saying that it was all racist until they realized it was a black restaurateur. And then they said, oh, it's you being a capitalist and that's bad. Or maybe just be respectful of an eating establishment. Don't do that at his place. You save that for the Olive Garden, okay? Where when you're here, you're here. Actually, I like their breadsticks. I'm not going to lie. So I don't know how many times they're going to run this as new info, but it's still awesome nonetheless. Hispanic support for Republicans grows further as Democrats move further leftward. It's like Democrats have given up on everything but white old people. That's all. We'll talk more about that in the days and weeks to come. The Labor Department, says Wall Street Journal, published flawed estimates of jobless claims. It's why they're called estimates. Good heavens. China wants your DNA. And what is China, Kane? China is, yeah.
A-hole.
Mm-hmm. Their state media claimed that the country has the world's largest database of genetic material, 80 million profiles, but Beijing wants more, according to Newsweek. Nobody wants that. Ooh. New York City officials bust an illegal Manhattan bottle club that was attended by 400 partygoers and arrest 4 people because they broke not only the COVID rules, but liquor laws. They're just having a mostly peaceful protest. Who are you to judge? How dare you stand against progress? Just have a seat. Have a seat right now. Thank you. Also, there is, so this is in South Pasadena. According to LA Times, an attacker was fatally beaten and stabbed by his victim's mother and sister, say authorities. A man broke into a South Pasadena home, attacked his estranged girlfriend, but she and the mother opened a can of whoop-edible snakes. And he had to be saved by police. It was a beatdown and the cops defended them. Stick with us.
Hi, I'm Sarah Carter, host of the Sarah Carter Podcast. Everywhere you look these days, we're seeing an aggressive effort to destroy what made America great, tearing down our history, attacking our freedoms, and canceling any person who dares to cross the progressive speech police. We cannot stand by and let this happen. It's time for the silent majority to become the unsilent majority. Join me on the Sarah Carter Podcast. Subscribe at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to The Dana Show on your Alexa by opening the app settings and linking your podcast service to your Alexa, and then say, Alexa, play The Dana Show podcast.
Federalist 68, Alexander Hamilton, talks about the method of choosing our chief magistrate, our president of the United States, and that this safeguard of vesting that authority exclusively with the state legislatures is the safeguard to making sure that corruption does not win. And when the vote of the people and the voice of the people is corrupted through influence, through fraud, then it is the responsibility, the duty, and the obligation, not just the choice, but the actual duty and obligation of the legislature to step in and to make sure that you don't certify false results.
Well, there you go. That's Jenna Ellis. I like her.
Yeah, I do too.
I really like her. She's speaking, of course, about the ongoing, oh my goodness, from Pennsylvania to Michigan to even more, a lot. The Dominion systems, and I have another headline coming out of Georgia. In the meantime, really quickly, this is where you can find me.
Oh, you caught me up.
Ah, I did! Because you're always like right there, and I'm like, he's waiting for me to do it.
For free online. Find all things Dana at danalash.com. At Dana Lash on Parler, at DLash on Twitter and Instagram. Stream The Dana Show live on Facebook at Official Dana Lash, simulcast on YouTube at Dana Lash, and live via the First, Channel 244 on Pluto TV.
And on a radio near you.
There you go. All right, so here's a headline that I was reliably informed by our media that This is cannot be true. Georgia Secretary of State investigating voter registration group run by Georgia Democratic Senate candidate Raphael Warnock. Huh. Why ever could they be under investigation? They were allegedly sending out ballot applications to non-residents, according to Georgia's Secretary of State. Warnock was CEO of the group. And who was the group founded by? Why, I am so surprised to discover that it is failed gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams, the pretend governor of Georgia. So now they're under investigation. Look at that. How dare you point out the actual irregularities and fraud that are taking place? It's like you want to undermine the election by pointing out the fraud that's happening in the election. You want to undermine a fraudulent election. That, I'm just following the logic. Look, like I said, I don't know that it was stolen, but I don't know that it wasn't. There's a lot of, you got to just show me. Show me. Goodness. So what is it called? Vote Forward? Yeah. Warnock is going up against Kelly Loeffler. So, do you honestly think that people who would edit emails to get a spy warrant on a private citizen because, oh no, Trump, that they would edit emails and lie about the guy, cover up the fact that he's a CIA asset, so credibly not a Russian one. You don't think those people would cheat? Wait a minute. You don't think the people that would work documented with the Kremlin to spy on Americans over politics, that they wouldn't cheat in an election? Really? Dang, I didn't realize there were some. We have like a couple of drive-bys who are very, very gullible. Have you looked that up in the dictionary yet? Because you're in there. Yeah, it's crazy. It's just a picture of you. Just saying. But really, you have to think that, right? If they're going to, if someone would do that and try to undermine an election in 2016, by, again, I can't emphasize this enough, literally, using it correctly, editing emails, omitting that Carter Page was a CIA asset so you could obtain a FISA warrant on him. Yeah, I totally believe that you're capable of cheating. Yep. So audit the ballots. And if you are all about reconciliation and love and togetherness and kittens and sunshine and candy cane paved roads and gumdrop rainbows, then you would have no problem with this, right? Just saying. Okay, so I'm amazed at this story. I covered it. If you follow me on the site, I sent it out to you too as well for the newsletter. Do you all remember about a year ago? It was almost a year ago. It was December of last year. This terrorist, Mohammed Saeed al-Shamrani, he was an aviation student down there in Pensacola. And he was able to walk unchallenged for about 10 minutes, murder three of our sailors, injure eight others, and because the service members were unarmed. One of the unarmed murdered service members was an award-winning sharpshooter, but... And later on, as I wrote about, the families were begging for the right of lawful carry. Well, there's a new investigative report that was released by the Navy shortly before Thanksgiving, and I've read it. It's 260 pages. And what the report found, and I included one of many screenshots I could put in, and I linked to the full report both on the site and the newsletter. But what the report concluded, and here's the first main sentence. The self-radicalization of Second Lieutenant al-Shamrani was the primary cause of this fatal attack. However, his actions and behaviors, along with the organizational environment inherent in the aviation pipeline, likely increased his probability of committing an insider attack. They literally said that there was a, quote, adverse microclimate. And that there were, quote, derogatory and sometimes abusive comments, as well as humiliating public reprimands. Oh, it gets crazier. You ready for this one? In addition, Second Lieutenant Al-Shamrani likely faced additional personal and professional stressors due to a language barrier, cultural differences, and the rigor of high-risk aviation training and academics. Mitigating these individual risk factors may have not stopped Second Lieutenant Al-Shamrani from evolving into a hostile insider threat, yet they may have lessened his cumulative load of stress, pressure, and anger. End quote. Mm-hmm. What about the, if we're going to have a discussion on toxic microclimates, and that was in the report, what about the toxic microclimate in which Al-Shamrani was born, the one that actually fosters and brings up these murderous clerics like those who radicalized him before he ever came to the United States? What about the toxic climate of not vetting foreign nationals from countries whose previous aviation students flew planes into our buildings? What about that toxic climate? So this, I mean, this is like wokeness. Wokeness is permeating the military now. And this guy, I wrote about this at the time, he was in broad daylight. He was espousing terrorist rhetoric. He was online threatening jihad 2 years before coming to the United States, by the way. A full 2 years before ever coming to the United States. You're telling me that you can send a missile over to a building and strike precisely a specific floor and a specific room, but you can't figure out that this foreign national who's coming over here is all jihad online for 2 years before accepting him into aviation training? I mean, I wrote that how does the government that promises to keep us safe miss so many warning signs? And where was the vetting of this foreign national? Now, do you know in the report, I'm not making this up. In the report, an example of the derogatory and remarks and abuse that he received was they called him porn stash. Where's the lie? I'm not making this up. Hands to sky. I link the report. You can read it for yourself. You don't have to take me telling you about it. You can read it. They called him porn stash. So you're telling me, and the way that the report reads, like they gloss over, like, yes, he was a terrorist. But you know what? Maybe he wouldn't have been so terroristy if you hadn't flipped his murder switch by making fun of his porn stash. He filed a complaint in April of 2019 because an instructor referred to him as porn stash. I'm just going to say this. If you cannot handle being called porn stash in the military, you can't handle being in a battlefield. You can't handle, you think the rigors and stress of that is bad? Why don't you actually talk to some combat vets and they can tell you about the rigors of stress?
Or just read Twitter. Like, really?
And how many times have you heard that phrase? Right?
What, porn stash?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. I think there's several accounts on Twitter that are named that.
How is it, and is it a negative thing? Can I just ask, is it negative?
It's just a thing.
Like Burt Reynolds had a stash, and Burt Reynolds was a very nice looking person.
Yeah. I'd say that the stash reflected that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's virility. It just, you know, I can't believe that he looks like the guy he looks like he would be completely offended and just over everything. But yet murder's okay. Like he's offended at being called porn stash, but not offended over killing three people. This is just crazy. Yeah, the report states that there was negative climate. Negative climate. You mean because you had an unvetted foreign national who had harbored terrorist tendencies towards his fellow students? Is that the climate you're talking about? And then they complain. They go, many of the complaints were filed properly, but they were never handled to prevent it. Oh, so he filed a complaint that because his instructor called him porn stash and it wasn't handled properly. Good. I'm glad they didn't handle it properly. I hope that they just trashed it the moment that he filed it, because you are a pansy if you are offended by that. And you don't deserve to be in the battlefield, because you're going to be too busy crying over your feelings and getting triggered over pancake syrup to actually go and kick ass, take names, and make sure that you have the six of your fellow soldiers. Good grief. And by the way, do you know how many people go through this program every single year without, you know, becoming terrorists?
Most of them.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, which I'm not. But it seems as though they're suggesting, well, people were mean to him, and meanness makes terrorists. I mean, I looked at this. It says, opinion 4221. There was a toxic microclimate within IMTO due to the unprofessional behavior of redacted. Redacted actions equated to abuse. And this was his April filing of porn stash. Now, look, I'm not going to, I'm sure the military has its own way of operating, but all I know is that if I were a dude and someone went and snitched, he called me porn stash, I would double down on it. You need to toughen up, buttercup. Good night. They're going to tear you apart like soft bread. You need to toughen up. Gosh. Now, I also noted in this that there were some who actually insinuated that it was our Second Amendment that was the problem and not the terrorist, because there was all this discussion of loopholes. Now, we wrote the law specifically to allow this foreign national to be able to get a gun. Just so you know, I have all that stuff very helpfully linked, yeah. But I just feel like the Navy could have shaved off a lot of time by just having like a one-word sentence. Well, terrorist. There's your report. Terrorist. He was radicalized before he ever came to the United States. So don't sit here and act like because his instructor called him porn stash that flipped his murder switch. No, it was flipped already when he came here. Quit looking for a reason to justify him being a barbarian. I don't include him as one of the three fatalities because he doesn't count. I don't count terrorists in that way.
2020 sucks, right? Don't let the source you get your info from suck too. Get The Dana Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Well, this headline comes from The Villages, where a Florida woman was arrested after she got drunk in the town square, and then she got lost and began to cry and, well, relieved herself on herself. So the story goes, a village of Marsh Bend woman, so it's Village of Marsh Bend, and a woman from the Village of Marsh Bend was arrested after drinking at Lake Sumter Landing and getting lost on the way home. 62-year-old, you know, it happens to the best of us. Not really. Diane Pavlik, bless her heart. She was driving shouldn't have been doing that at all. She made a left turn she entered a cul-de-sac, made a left turn, and then it was a really wide turn. Her vehicle jumped the curve. And she just drove into somebody's yard. And a community watch driver, I don't even know what that is, spotted the vehicle and thought that the woman, because she was, don't drink and drive, she was so drunk, they thought she was suffering from a medical episode. And so he pulled to the side of the vehicle and made contact with her, and she had urinated on herself. And she told the community watch driver that she lives in the Village of Marsh Bend. And she was like, can you follow me home? And he was like, what? And so he called his supervisor, and really, you had to call your supervisor, who then said, yeah, you need to call the sheriff. And then they had to call the police. Like, you wouldn't just go, you smell like a bottle, I'm calling the cops. And so when a deputy arrived on the scene, the Florida woman said she was lost and she just wanted to go home. She said that she just had a couple drinks at the polo fields. And then she went to the town square where she had some more alcohol drinks, quote, alcohol drinks, and danced. And then she said that she had been at the square with her singles group. And when they asked her to participate in a field sobriety exercise, she said she had tennis elbow and tried to show off a dance move, which caused her to fall backwards. And the deputy wrote in the arrest report, quote, I asked her where she was going, and she stated she was going to dance. Then she refused to cooperate and cried. She was taken to Sumter County Detention Center. Her blood alcohol was 0.233. So it was a lot. Stick with us. More of the show in store.
It's the Dana Show.
Washington. You're unmuted.
Hey, Jeff Zucker, are you there? Hey,
yes.
This is James O'Keefe. We've been listening to your CNN calls for basically 2 months, recording everything. Just wanted to ask you some questions, if you have a minute. Do you still feel you're the most trusted name in news? Because I have to say, from what I've been hearing on these phone calls, I don't know about that. I mean, we got a lot of recordings that indicate you're not really that independent of a journalist.
Oh.
Thank you for your comments. So everybody, in light of that, I think what we'll do is we'll set up a new system, and we'll be back with you. We'll do the rest of the call a little bit later.
We're going to release those recordings today at 7 o'clock. So stay tuned. Ooh. It's going to be fun.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good
day. Oh, my gosh. The brass. You had to know that a guy who started his career by dressing as a pimp and getting Acorn defunded has no qualms at all whatsoever about hopping on a conference call with CNN and Jeff Zucker. It's James O'Keefe. He'll be on tomorrow. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Kane, tell them where they can find me.
Do the game show one this time?
Do the game show one. Right. Yeah. Let's do that one.
All right, let's do that one.
Find Dana at DLash on Twitter and Instagram, Dana Lash on Parler and YouTube, Official Dana Lash on Facebook, and simulcast via the First, Channel 244 on Pluto TV.
There you have it. All right, so, as I said, welcome back to the show. We have Cheryl Atkinson, who's going to be joining us later on in the program. And by the way, I love how I said I told you guys off air I was going to start the second half of last hour one way and totally didn't do that at all. Forgot about it the moment I said it. All right, so where to even begin? I know we're still watching some of the stuff with as it relates to the ballot battle and everything with Georgia and Michigan, and because we just had the story about how Raphael Warnock down in Georgia, apparently his group that he was a part of is now they're being investigated because they were sending ballots apparently to people who just weren't, who were not there. They were just sending random ballots to people. But I was reliably informed that there's no fraud and there's no irregularities. I was told that there wasn't. I was thinking about this this morning, that if Trump didn't legitimately win, and I think that there's enough people out there, I mean, regardless, it's still concerning, win or not. Some people just want to be ruled. You know?
True.
Last hour, we were discussing how this thing with Scott Atlas and Anthony Fauci, and how Atlas has been consistent from day one, whereas Fauci's been all over the place, back and forth. The school openings, bars keep them closed, schools can reopen, back and forth, back and forth. And the media lionizes Fauci and demonizes Scott Atlas. And he's always told people the truth. Not going to go out there and sugarcoat anything or not sugarcoat anything, and not going to be overly dramatic about it. It's just straight, simple truth. And the media was mad at Trump because he didn't freak out over the coronavirus. They were mad at George W. Bush because he didn't freak out when they whispered in his ear about 9/11. They'd like manipulation. They like to manipulate those who want to be ruled. It's really ultimately what it is. There are some people out there who just, they feel, like I was telling you, when the story was going around that it could be airborne, the virus could be airborne, you kind of were sort of figuring, right? Everybody was sort of coming to that conclusion on their own. Mm-hmm. But there are some people out there who are like, I just can't take it seriously until the government officially tells me. I just can't make a decision about my life until the government tells me. But you know people like that. Well, the government says. Yes, the government, because they've done so many things correctly all throughout history. I mean, when have they been wrong? Except, you know, for a number of issues, not allowing women to vote in slavery, and that was Democrats, and then they fought for it. But I digress. But still, I think that there were people who were mad. I don't think I know. There were people who were mad that there wasn't a federalized nanny to tell everyone to stay home, and here's some allowance money, and you stay home and you can do this but not do that. They feel out of control and terrified when they're not ruled. I hope people realize that this is much deeper than just Republican or Democrat. There are a lot of people out there who do not have the confidence to participate in liberty. They don't have the confidence. Some of them don't have the skill set or knowledge. Liberty, as I've said so many times, it is not a guarantee of comfort, nor is it a guarantee of happiness, nor is it a guarantee of wellness. It doesn't even guarantee opportunity. It's just you can go out and create it. You're free to seek it, but it's not provided for you. Freedom isn't a handout. But if you listen to all of these people today, that's seemingly what it is. I was talking to my oldest son last night about the college loan thing and how you have people like Elizabeth Warren out there talking about college loans and we need to forgive college debt. Excuse me, do I get a refund then? Not only for my stuff, but for my kids' stuff? Where's my refund at? I love it. All these people out there who sit here and talk such a great game about forgiving college debt. But she took a six-figure salary for teaching one class. Do you think that woman was interested in taking a pay cut? Did she volunteer to take a pay cut? No, she didn't. No, but everyone wants to sit here and go, well, we need to forgive college loans. What, so it can accumulate again because nobody's interested in actually solving the real problem, which is that government nationalized student loans that created this? That's one of the problems. The other problem is not everybody needs to go to college. A friend of mine had said that it was a subsidy to the aristocracy, which is a perfect description of this, because you're going to have people out there who are trades, going to skilled trades. You're going to have people out there who are going to be teachers or something else, and they're going to be expected to assume the loan debt for these people who are racking up five figures in debt to study damn Sanskrit or something, or women's studies. That's what it is. All these people from that take on this college debt, I didn't agree to the terms of that loan. Y'all better be very careful about signing people up to assume a loan that they didn't agree to nor sign for. We live by the rule that if you have cash to buy it, then you can buy it. I will not finance stuff. I have my mortgage. I will not finance stuff. I will not do it. And we have this instant, and I've never done it. I have never done it. Even when I was in my 20s and broke as a joke, I still never did it. But we have like this idea today that not only that's how you should live, but everyone else should pay for it too. No. Mm-mm. No, I told my son, I said, hey, Gen Z, y'all are about to get screwed royally. Royally screwed. So I saw this article from New York Magazine. Last hour, I was talking about Melania Trump and how some style editor or whatever at Washington Post thinks that her Melania Trump plus Christmas is racist because she's white. It was a white woman who said that. I don't know. That she symbolizes white Christmas. I don't even know what that means. I saw this piece from, New York Magazine. Jonathan Chait writes, white women voted for Trump is the worst election trope. And says that white women voted for Trump, or so you probably heard. In the aftermath of Trump's 2016 victory, the finding from early exit polls was 53% of white women voted for Trump, and that formed the basis for all of these op-eds and everything else. And he says that's not true. The fact is not true, and it's not even close to the biggest problem with this ubiquitous place in progressive social justice discourse. And the 53%, it was actually 47%. And he writes that the impulse that propelled so many writers to blame white women for electing Trump proved strong enough to survive even after the factual basis was undercut. There was a Washington Post op-ed that was titled "White Women Vote Republican, Get Used to It, Democrats," all other kinds of stuff. But I've noticed this too after 2020, after the election, because there were all of these. It created a micro industry within social justice. That, like, where you had books and book deals and all kinds of think pieces that were written around the idea that white women voted for Trump, therefore white women are racist. And it's like it was a whole anti-racism micro industry in the cottage industry of SJWism. And he writes that the dogma can run so deep that its adherents who observe different political viewpoints within the white female category literally cannot make any sense of it. One column concluded that the white female participation in anti-Trump demonstrations must have been deceptive. It is one of the craziest, and it's true, though. And he ends with saying, even if you somehow assume that forcing people who voted Republican to apologize constitutes a viable political strategy, forcing Democrats to apologize because they share demographic traits with people who voted Republican surely does not. There's little by little, there's a pushback on this cancel culture garbage. But I've noticed that with the whole white woman trend thing, it was a way to be both acceptably racist and sexist because the trope provided for both. It was a great thing for progressive males. You could be a sexist mansplainer and also a racist. True. Now, New York Post has a piece. Whole Foods CEO John Mackey says socialism is trickle up poverty. Are they going to boycott groceries again? I'm just curious. I don't really shop at Whole Foods because it is, I don't know. I think you have to have a certain percentage of hemp on you to even be allowed in. And who was the comedian who was like, they have a potions aisle. You go in, they have a potions area. There's like a cauldron in the back and all this stuff. But I think it's kind of, you can get a young coconut there, which makes a really good coconut meringue. I will say that. But Mackey was urging his fellow corporate leaders to join him in pushing against the rising tide of socialism. And he says it's going to plunge the world into poverty, and asked whether or not the business world's culture needs to change. He goes, it needs to evolve. Otherwise, socialists are going to take over. And I didn't know he was 67. By the way, but Amazon purchased Whole Foods in 2017. But he said that, you can't reject capitalism. And he says you can't regress. And that's, that's true. But I'm waiting for everybody to boycott groceries again, because he said this, even though Amazon bought them out. I'm just waiting because it's going to happen. But he's not wrong, though. That's the thing. He isn't incorrect about this. All right. Coming up, there's an airline bailout hidden in one coronavirus relief bill. We'll have that for you. We'll also speak with Cheryl Atkinson here coming up. She will join us. And we got headlines on the way, too, so don't go anywhere.
How dare you be uninformed?
How dare you?
Let Dana get you up to speed by subscribing to the podcast on Apple Podcasts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Just, because it wouldn't be 2020 without Congress voting on Carol Baskin's big cat bill. Literally, the Carol Baskin from Tiger King. The House could vote as soon as Thursday on the what the Florida-based sanctuary run by Carol Baskin calls the most important big cat bill ever. It would outlaw private ownership of big cats like tigers, lions, and leopards. No, I don't know anything about cougars in bars. They facilities that already own big cats would be allowed to keep them, but it would restrict public contact with the animals. I just think it's just that's it's totally 2020. Just peak 2020. Just had to share that. This is crazy. So I actually never knew the name of the. I knew what this telescope was. And I'm going to totally butcher this. It's the observatory in Puerto Rico, the big giant like bowl, the Arecibo. Is that how it said? The 900-ton platform that was suspended above this giant dish fell overnight. It collapsed on itself. It suffered two major cable malfunctions over the last couple of months. And I mean, they said that thankfully no one was hurt, but they have to assess the damage, and it's so it just doesn't look good. That's just bad, bad, bad. And it's, yeah, you can, the Gregorian Dome is what it's called. So good heavens. Let's see, I got a couple of other things here for you. Gas wars. Greece and UAE agreed a mutual defense pact. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. We're running out of time, but Cheryl Atkinson joins us next. Stay with us.
We're not going to force you to wear a mask, but if you do head out, take the Dana Show with you by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Does it make you nervous for our future that the people in charge, people with long lists of credentials who should know better, presumably aren't stupid, embraced a kind of witchcraft or superstition and said things that were provably untrue for many months? What does that portend for our future if we continue to allow that?
You know, I think we've this is very important. I think we see that objective journalism is nearly dead. And I think we now saw that science has been politicized. It's very, very dangerous.
True. That's Dr. Scott Atlas, who is discussing Anthony Fauci's change in tone. Dr. Fauci's change in tone. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. And this was one of the many examples when discussing media bias and journalistic integrity, and how I think one of the reasons why everything seems so chaotic is because people don't feel as though they can trust who is on their televisions, and they feel as though they can't trust the byline anymore and anything that follows after. They don't know where to turn to find out what is happening in their government. And then if they are able to find some information, they don't know whether or not they can believe it. And quite frankly, you can't blame them. And I used, for instance, the Atlas v. Fauci as an example, how Fauci was lionized by the press, and yet he was really back and forth, and we highlighted this in our first hour at length. He went back and forth on school closings and masks and everything else, whereas Scott Atlas was pretty consistent throughout everything, but he did not give in to manipulation and being used to as a tool of manipulation to control people. And he just told them the truth, and he knew what he knew and knew what he didn't. And the way in which they were treated by the press is astounding. And not just that, but the reporting of cases according with states that have Democrat governors versus Republican governors. And I'm not even getting into the ballot battle with all of these irregularities and genuine questions that are causing reasonable people to have legitimate suspicions as to whether or not the system that they were told by Democrats for the previous 4 years couldn't be trusted, whether now it actually can or can't be trusted because of all of the stuff that they've been seeing on the news. So it is absolute info warfare is what we're in right now. So where do you go, and what becomes of this? Because at some point the dust has to settle, doesn't it? One of the individuals who's been really, I think, a voice of reason on this, and not just she doesn't have any other agenda other than just getting the story out and sharing the story, which is so refreshing, and it seems so weird now, right? Because everyone else is either advocate or editorial masquerading as journalists. Cheryl Atkinson is an award-winning reporter, and she has a new book out called Slanted, and it's available. Actually, it's out just out last month, and it gets into exactly what we're talking about, journalistic integrity. And she joins us now via phone. Cheryl, a pleasure to have you, and really appreciate your work.
Well, thank you for having me, and I agree with your assessment. It's really a shocking time for journalism and for information in general.
It is. And I think it makes, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, I mean, I'm a commentator and I absolutely am an editorialist and I make no bones about it. And you really are dedicated to just getting the truth of the matter out, the story. And it's, and I honestly don't know, and I don't even care what your political leanings are. But what's amazing is that it seems as though people such as yourselves, who are real journalists, you are a, you're an investigative reporter, that just by doing your job, somehow you're classified in a, you're put into a political category. And I find that fascinating. I mean, this is at some point in way on into the future, generations are going to be analyzing everything that happened during this time. But I'm curious to know your perspective, just doing straight news in this era of chaos. And you are one of few people who do what you do.
Well, you would be surprised maybe to find out in Slanted that I interviewed a lot of, I think the only one that's done this, current and former network news insiders, publications like people from New York Times, CNN, Washington Post, MSNBC, and they all, to a man and woman, even though they describe themselves, when they did describe themselves politically as progressive, they see the same problems you do. And why don't you hear about it? Well, it's because this information landscape, as I've been writing about for years, has become so managed. It's designed to make you think things that aren't true are true. That if you have a thought or an opinion about whether the news has taken a bad turn or a news topic, coronavirus, the election, you're supposed to think that you're an outlier when you're not. If you have a certain view or you're looking at a certain study that these powerful interests don't want you to know about. So, yes, the person has to be controversialized. If you're a neutral reporter, if you simply do not spend all of your time attacking aggressively Donald Trump, you're falsely portrayed as a conservative, because the left lurched what used to be the center so far left that if you're anything other than that, if you're not on board with that narrative, you must be controversialized as either politically motivated somehow or otherwise controversial so that people won't listen to you.
Yeah, and a great example of that, Andrea Mitchell yesterday made one remark while on MSNBC saying that she thought it was that the Biden campaign, that the Biden team's response was delayed after it came out that he had sprayed his ankle and he had this hairline fracture in his foot, and that they didn't, journalists in the pool didn't even learn until Sunday when it happened Saturday. She said one thing, and then there was just a, whether it was Facebook or didn't even matter the platform, progressives were infuriated that she had questioned this and demanding that she retire. And she's pretty far left, I think it's safe to say. I understand that there is a heightened political tribalism, but surely there's still an appetite for news. Or Cheryl, do you think that people are too maybe ensconced in their separate corners at this point for that to even have an impact?
Oh, I believe there's a huge appetite for real news. You know, I worked at CNN. I write about this in the book, too, back when it was a news organization. And we wouldn't have dreamed of editorializing. We covered other stories, editorializing on these things the way they do today. And there's still an appetite for that. So even people, because I've been asking about this for years, even people who want to get their news from CNN because they want it left or from a place they consider right, perhaps Fox News, when I ask, they still want a place they can go in addition to that, like CNN used to be, where they feel like they're just getting the facts, they're not getting the spin, and they don't have to discount what's being reported according to what they assume is the viewpoint of the reporter, or more accurately, the special interests that are pulling strings at that news organization. I think there's a huge appetite for it. And I get called at least every week by either journalists or investors or tech people who are trying to figure out a solution to this problem, how they can meet this public demand for a neutral place or a place where news and various views can be seen without censorship, without being deplatformed, without having to shape what you say based on the fear that someone's going to put you out of business or controversialize you.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We're speaking with Cheryl Atkinson, whose new book on journalistic integrity, Slanted, is out now. And Cheryl, we're talking about, you know, obviously the appetite for real news. I know it used to be that viewership would kind of demand where the content would go, and that it seems as though like networks would bring people what they were clamoring for, what they wanted to know. Has that shifted, and who ultimately is, I guess, controlling editorially what is going? Is it, I mean, really, how much of that is in the viewer's hands anymore? And when do you think that shifted?
I started writing about that phenomenon in 2014 when I left CBS News ahead of my contract, kind of disgusted by these trends that I saw coming in our industry. And that was one of the shocking things that I noticed, that there was a time when, and the stories I covered, such as Follow the Money on taxpayer waste, this regular series I did on earmarks, problematic earmarks, and again, waste of taxpayer money. Those, I was always told, were some of the most popular features that we ever did at CBS News, and they were stopped at some point. So contrary to the fact that we would get viewers or retain viewers with these very popular segments, there were strings being pulled that made us take actions that were actually contrary to viewership and financial interests of the news division. And I kept trying to figure out why that was and what was going on. And I concluded that there are more important interests at a higher level, more important ways that these powerful corporations and political interests and operatives have figured out how to pull strings and use us as a propaganda platform, not as a news organization that's supposed to earn some money or stay financially independent. We have become little more than propaganda tools for these operatives that have figured out how to use this and get their nose under the tent at news organizations.
Yeah, I remember growing up, and I read in school, I studied Joe Mitchell, and he loved to tell people stories. And, you know, you always have the famed kind of gumshoe investigative reporter. And those used to be, like, when you would think of journalists and reporters, those are the people that you thought of, like the people who would tell the stories of whistleblowers and who really watched out for the taxpayer. And now it's almost as though you have advocates and activists who realize that they can't really make a lot of money in the world of activism or political advocacy. So they decide to go into journalism and do a stint there and then sell books and then become, you know, take a position in some administration. Is that kind of how you see it, too? Because there's just so few people of your discipline. And I just kind of wonder if that's what you run across.
I think that a bigger factor, although that's related, a bigger factor is, as I discussed in the smear, there's a whole organization, a multi-billion dollar industry of political action committees, LLCs, nonprofits that really have these corporate or political interests behind them, that train so-called reporters and journalists how to do this advocacy for their side, and then how to fan out and go contribute to these places like Salon or even more newsy organizations like Politico, or get hired in the newsrooms at Fox News and CNN and all these other places. They're trained on how to do that, how to get inside the newsroom, so that when they do report, yes, it's what they believe, and yes, the editorial people now codify and approve of this sort of biased reporting, because from top to bottom now, they've been, I like to say, they are us. These operatives that tried to influence us for all these years and had pretty good success have now been hired and brought into our newsroom. So if you think of how journalism has transformed its goal or its seen mission as something other than presenting the facts as they occur or investigating wherever the facts go, they now see their goal or their mission is trying to make you think a certain way and keep certain views and scientific studies and people from being seen and heard and controversializing them. It's a whole different ball game from what you and I thought of as journalism all these years.
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with Cheryl Atkinson, and you can watch her on Sinclair on Sunday's Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. I could talk about this with you for such a long time, but I know we're coming down to the end of our time here, but one last question for you. What is the future of news and cable news, where is usually where everybody seemed to direct their attention? But I think that's actually dissipating, and more people are going to, you know, streaming things or online, or I think, you know, Gen Z gets their information from social media. What is the future of it?
You know, there are probably people smarter than I am that can figure that out. I would say, in a general sense, I'm somewhat hopeful because, I'm contacted fairly routinely by people working on this problem. They're working on technology such as using blockchain technology that will help us verify the veracity of information that can't be then shoved down the memory hole by some interest or big tech company where interests are pulling strings. They're trying to figure out how the truth and facts and different viewpoints can be published without fear of the organization being deplatformed. I think one of the most chilling quotes in my book is from a manager at an international news organization based here in the U.S. that people would know, who said, because of this control of social media, where they push back and controversialize these organized interests when they don't like something, he said that he pulls his punches when it comes to telling stories and what stories they tell. And then he said, the newsman in me says to tell the truth, but the businessman in me says, what sort of Pyrrhic victory would it be if we get these stories out and then are deplatformed or controversialized and we don't even have a platform? So that's pretty scary if you think about major news organizations kowtowing to the whims of these interests that now control social media, and they're just not going to report the truth or the whole truth or all of the stories for fear, just as these companies hope for fear of being deplatformed.
Yes, and we all wait to see what happens with the Section 230 and those protections from liability that Twitter and Facebook and so many of these platforms that you mentioned that they enjoy now. The book is Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And as Cheryl has written in her book, and I'll remind everybody, that those are the people who were first pushing these platforms to censor voices and to suppress voices. It was the media. Cheryl Atkinson, a host of Full Measure. Cheryl, it's a pleasure to have you, and thanks so much. Congrats on the book.
Thanks for having me to talk about it. I appreciate it.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Take care. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this final hour of the show, at least for today. And that is, what is the future of news? And as much as tech has to play into it, and she's written about, obviously she's covered the election, she's covered the coronavirus stuff and all kinds of, but I love looking, that's very interesting to know that, investors and all these other people are reaching out to her. They're trying to find somebody who actually just still reports news anymore.
Want a deeper dive into The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana Lash's chapter and verse newsletter by visiting danalash.com and clicking on the subscribe tab. Don't worry, your info is safe with her.
So the attorney general tells the Associated Press that the Justice Department hasn't uncovered widespread voting fraud that would have changed the outcome. So we'll discuss that because we're out of time tomorrow. And then Ellen Page comes out as transgender, and okay, Anne, is it going to make you act better? Is your acting going to improve? We're busy. We're busy. Today in Stupidity, came.
All right, those harpies on The View, boy, they're working hard. Whoopi Goldberg is one of them, and she has no clue of any of the staff, I guess, in the Trump administration, but she called Ronna McDaniel Ron A. McDaniel. Listen to this.
Let's not get into what's disgusting here, please. Georgia Republicans are taking his claims very seriously, asking RNC Chief Ron A. McDaniel why they should bother voting in the runoff Senate.
Is it any more clear how clueless these girls are?
But is she doing that on purpose, or
I don't think
is
so.
That she just doesn't know what she's talking about?
There was no snark in her voice.
Well, that does it for us today, folks. Have a great night. We'll be back with you tomorrow.